TV with Cam Edwards.
It's just a matter of time where we will have this law. It will be law, and we're not going to see the blood in the street scenario that people charge that we are. It's just not going to happen.
That's Ohio State Representative Ron Hood, the sponsor of Constitutional Carry in the Buckeye State of Ohio. Good Friday to you. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA TV. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So when we signed on with Cam and Company back in 2004, 15 years ago, right to carry had actually just come to the state of Ohio. And again, there were predictions that there were going to be, you know, shootouts in Blockbuster parking lots. Blockbuster, by the way, is no longer in Ohio, but the right to carry still is. So now lawmakers are talking about, again, that next step. And Ron Hood says to him, it's pretty simple.
20 years ago, we were debating whether you should even have a right to carry concealed or not. Today, the debate is whether you need a permission slip from the government for a constitutional right.
Now, the bill has had multiple hearings in the State House in Columbus, but so far, I don't think we've had a vote scheduled. We obviously will be keeping our eyes very closely watching that constitutional carry bill there in the Buckeye State. If Ohio passes this legislation this year and it's signed into law, that would make Ohio the fourth state just in 2019 to adopt constitutional carry. Now, we've seen a number of financial institutions, big businesses, big corporations decide that they want to get involved in the gun control debate. And generally, they're coming down on the side of more gun control. And they're doing what they can to go after the law-abiding gun owners in this country, as well as the firearms industry. So I thought it was fascinating. A Hollywood Reporter had a story about a gathering of celebrities recently, because we've seen that too. Right, celebrity activists getting involved here. And there was a stylist named Carla Welch. Clearly I don't know much about stylists. But there's a stylist named Carla Welch who dresses some of the rich and famous. And she was quoted by the Hollywood Reporter as saying that when I do a collaboration, she said, for me, my power is to be able to say, okay, Levi's, I want to do this collaboration with you, but I want this much money to go to gun control. Will you work with me on that? And in the case of Levi's, the answer was, yeah, absolutely, because Levi's has hopped on the anti-gun bandwagon. Well, we've got another company, a really big company, although you may not realize you're utilizing their services or even taking part in their product. Salesforce.com is the latest big company to announce that going forward, anybody who sells semi-automatic firearms that they would deem to be quote-unquote assault weapons, or magazines over 10 rounds, will not be able to use their software. Now, I didn't realize this. Salesforce has about 40,000 employees in the United States. They are a big part of the market share for what it is that they do. And here to talk about what it is that they do and how this might impact the firearms industry, Mark Oliver from the National Shooting Sports Foundation is with us. Mark, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Cam. How are you?
I'm good. I appreciate you staying in the office a little bit later on a Friday afternoon to talk about this with us. So what is Salesforce.com? Why do they have any connection to the firearms industry at all?
Well, Salesforce is what they call a customer or resource management tool. They are a lot of the back end. What you might not see behind the gun counter is a lot of these gun companies are using this to be able to stay in touch with their customers, to be able to make sure that they can manage the needs of their customers. So a lot of the stuff that's happening with this is behind the scenes. It's helping businesses to be able to do business more efficiently. And now what you're seeing is the little bit of corporate virtual policy, corporate policy virtual signaling coming down and starting to say, well, you know, you're right that you're exercising. Maybe we don't like it. Maybe we're going to start to curtail your ability to do business to be able to provide that right. And that's where it becomes very concerning to us in the firearms industry.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that tweet we just showed from Mark Benioff, he's the co-CEO of Salesforce, and there he is last year. This is the most popular rifle in America. The AR-15 is the most popular rifle in America. Ban it. That's his position. And so now he's taking his company and saying, we're not going to engage in any sort of business with any company that sells this firearm that I believe should be banned.
Sure. And it'd be nice to say that he had an original idea, but this is something we've also seen that Citibank and Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase and several other big banks have tried. And Senator Crapo and Senator Cramer have all called him on the carpet on this. So we're starting to see that it's not just the big banks that are doing this, but now you're starting to see the business service providers that want to go do this. And again, we need to put this into perspective. We had an assault weapons ban in this country for 10 years. It didn't work. Gun sales continue to climb. And crime continues to go down. There are more than 16 million modern sporting rifles, AR-15 type rifles, in private possession today in America. We're not seeing a vast use of these firearms used in crimes. The vast majority of crimes are still committed by criminals with handguns, and even more so with clubs, fists, and hands. So it just doesn't add up. What they want to do is curtail your right because they're uncomfortable with it. They want to make it go away. They couldn't do that through legislation, so now they're going to try and do it through a corporate boardroom.
Absolutely. And again, I think that this, if nothing else, at the bare minimum, should wake up gun owners to the fact that, you know, really for the first time in certainly my adult life, we are seeing a well-funded, sustained campaign that is, you know, long-term in its focus. They're not thinking what's going to happen 2 weeks from now. They're thinking about what they're going to be doing 2 years from now, even 20 years from now. And part of that is, as you say, not just using the state houses, not just using the courtrooms, but using the boardrooms, using the school board meetings, using any and every opportunity that they can to, again, not go after violent criminals, not go after the people who are actually committing these violent crimes, but to go after the culture of lawful gun ownership, because ultimately they believe that that's what the problem is.
Sure, exactly what they see. And you got to understand the way they're doing this, again, is they're not going after your elected officials anymore. While they're still putting pressure on those folks, they're realizing they're not getting a lot of traction because it's just, you know, an American right. It's ensconced in our Constitution. It's a pre-existing right that you have the moment you're born as an American, the right to keep and bear arms and defend yourself. So what they're doing this now is going through unelected, unaccountable, faceless, nameless corporate boardrooms where you have no recourse. You don't have an ability to go back and exact some kind of accountability out of these folks. That's the scary part.
All right. So, Mark, I'm not a socialist. I'm a believer that capitalism is a better system than socialism. I'm also a realist. I understand that no system is perfect. And I wonder, I mean, you know, so the response that I've seen is, well, look, this is the free market at work. Businesses can do what they want to do. And if you're a firearms industry, customer, you can go somewhere else, right? Unless, and we know, again, you mentioned that there are several banks that have instituted similar policies. We know that Mark Benioff is talking to others within his industry as well, saying, hey, you know what, you should adopt these policies too. If everybody's on board and all of a sudden now there's a blacklist against a, you know, lawful legal industry in this country in an attempt, in a outright blatant attempt to try to cripple or destroy that industry. I'm not sure that falls under the free market, so to speak. So how big a threat is this right now to the firearms industry? And what you mentioned legislation to protect the industry. What do you think can be done to try to allow the lawful commerce in firearms?
Sure. I think the first thing is exactly what we're doing here. We need to make sure that everyone in the industry knows. We need to make sure gun owners know, the people who want to be able to exercise their rights and buy firearms from these companies, they need to know what's happening and make sure that they're involved as well. The next thing that I think we need probably doing is we're going to be starting to talk to our legislators on Capitol Hill. This is a serious concern because it does interfere with the lawful commerce of firearms. And firearms is a legal product sold lawfully. It's regulated. And we need to make sure that is not interfered. What Salesforce is doing is interfering with that ability to do that business. This same model was also brought to MasterCard and brought to Visa. And Visa and MasterCard both said, this is not our business to be monitoring what people are buying and selling. Our process there is to make sure that we allow an efficient process to go forward. So I think that's really where Salesforce needs to kind of lean back. I get that they may want to hold it. And if the CEOs want to give money to gun control causes, that's their right to do that. But to interfere with the ability for the lawful commerce in arms to flow forward is very, very concerning to our country.
Mark Oliver with the National Shooting Sports Foundation. Thank you as always, sir. It is good talking with you, and look forward to doing this again very soon.
Yes, sir. It's always great to see you, Camp. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. One more quick note about Salesforce before we move on here. When I was doing some research, I just wanted to figure out what other countries Salesforce operates in, because, again, 40,000 employees? And the answer is they operate in almost every country out there, including authoritarian regimes like China. So this is from the website engineering.salesforce.com, how they optimize their performance in China. They note that China has what they call unique challenges. Yeah. Along, they say, with the usual characteristics that can slow down any organization, such as its design, how customers are using it, the speed of the open internet. China's infrastructure includes the Great Firewall, which they just say is content regulated at the national level. They don't get into what's actually regulated. And in-country bandwidth congestion. So they note that among the things that they do to make life easier for their clients in the authoritarian regime of China is that they have actually worked with China. As a matter of fact, they said that they have a relationship with China Telecom, part of their network peering. Salesforce has privately peered with China Telecom, which is a state-owned company, by the way, in China. They've privately peered with China Telecom to further improve connectivity from Greater China to the Salesforce global infrastructure. So, I mean, really, honestly, if they're worried about, you know, ethics and humane practices, maybe you want to hop out of bed with the authoritarian regime that commits human rights abuses every single day of its existence and has been responsible since its existence for the deaths of tens of millions of its citizens. But again, that's just my two cents. All right. We've been talking quite a bit about what's going on in Canada. And actually, we have an update for you about the potential gun ban in Canada. But I got to tell you, I saw a story that completely slipped under my radar. Another country has actually enacted a sweeping gun ban. Nigeria. I didn't know about this. Somehow I missed this story, but I saw it today from allafrica.com, where they note that the House of Representatives in Nigeria are urging the president there, Muhammadu Buhari, to reverse his executive order that revoked all gun certificates and licenses throughout Nigeria, throughout the entire nation. Every legal gun owner in Nigeria just had their gun license revoked and became an illegal gun owner. So one of these lawmakers said that there's an increase in the number of deaths resulting from terrorism, kidnapping, and banditry, as well as other violent crimes in the country. And again, he says that in response to the local and international outcry, the president signed an executive order to remove, revoke, and banish all gun certificates and licenses throughout the Federation. Again, with the stated intent of dealing with terrorism, kidnapping, and banditry, as well as other violent crimes. But this lawmaker said that the order, again, targeted, does this not sound familiar? The order was targeted at legal gun owners, while there appeared to be no institutional actionable policy or plan to mop up small arms and light weapons in the country. In other words, it's a soundbite solution. It's aimed at people who aren't the problem. And the net result is that you've got a sweeping gun ban. Legal gun owners have now declared are now declared to be illegal gun owners. And they're still not addressing the violent crime. Now, I don't know if there's been a response from the president there in Nigeria. I'll try to keep a closer eye on this story now that I'm aware of it. And again, we've got an update for you on what's going on in Canada in just a couple of minutes. Stockton, California, they're getting ready for a long, hot summer. Violence is on the rise. You got plenty of gun control laws in California, but somehow criminals seem to continue to be completely unaware of what those laws are. And again, you've got an increase in homicides in Stockton. The chief of police says that this summer they want to try to do something different. And it's something that we've actually talked about on this program before, using various layers of law enforcement to target the most violent offenders. Chief Eric Jones says that is going to be running a partnership with the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, as well as the ATF. And he says this is just one piece of the puzzle.
Certainly there's a brazenness going on and a propensity to carry firearms and use them between these very active groups, which is concerning and is exactly why we're bringing in extra help.
So again, those groups, by the way, are not different, you know, groups of Boy Scouts that are targeting one another. We're talking about gangs. And so what this is going to do, what this task force is going to do, is identify the most violent gangs, the most violent offenders within those gangs, and target those individuals for the harshest prosecution available, which is probably going to be under federal law rather than California law, despite all of California's gun control laws that are on the books, because most of those, again, are aimed at restricting the rights of legal law-abiding gun owners. I wish the chief and all the law enforcement officers there the very best in trying to bring down the violence in Stockton, California this summer. And we just saw a few days ago now, it has been, a stormy and tumultuous weather event for the Yankee Cup this year. But I tell you what, the results, sunny skies for our friend Bruce Pyatt, who joins us on the program right now. And once again, a champion there at Bianchi. Bruce, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Cam.
Hey, congratulations. I think you and I have done this a time or two before, talking about your championship at Bianchi, but it has been a little bit of time here, right? 2009 was the last time that you were the champion at Bianchi.
That's right. This is 10 years since I hoisted the cup, and it sure feels good to be back in the winner's circle. You're right. We did have a little stormy weather out there. 2 days before, we had thunderstorms all around us. We had tornadoes just 20 miles south down in Jefferson City. We were fortunate to, in fact, one went through Hallsville, where the Bianchi Cup is actually held. So we're very fortunate that nobody got hurt, and we survived very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we were talking with some of the folks down there while the stores were rolling in one day, and it sounded nasty. I'm glad, again, everybody was all right. And again, your sixth championship there in Missouri for the Bianchi Cup, 1993, 1997, 1999, 2005, 2009, now 2019. Bruce, how does this victory compare to that last one 10 years ago and the others going back, you know, back to the early 1990s?
Yeah, well, this one was especially nice because last year I had to miss my first Bianchi Cup in, well, since I started back in 88 was my first year. Last year I had my shoulder reconstructed from an injury. First time I missed. So first year back and things started working out well. In April, I shot my first NRA action match. And I was still a little stiff down in the Crawfish Cup, but I shot it well. I actually won down there. And coming back to the Cup, I was still stiff, but the more I practiced, the looser it was getting. So it all worked out on Friday morning. I shot a perfect score, 179 X's, and it was enough to win that Cup behind me. So very pleasant surprise.
That is absolutely amazing. And again, congratulations to you on that that incredible victory. And, you know, again, having that 10-year gap between hoisting that cup, obviously you had some amazing performances during that 10-year period. But, you know, it really strikes me. We're talking about going back to 1993 to 2019, you able to compete at that championship level. You look at a lot of sports, you're not going to find somebody who is able to get, you know, the MVP of Major League Baseball in 1993 and in 2019, right? I mean, the shelf life for a lot of those athletes is just the window is not that big. This is one of the things that I love about competitive shooting is that this is something that you can do for years and years and years. You don't have to give it up just because you hit a certain age.
Yeah, correct. All you have to maintain is your pretty much your eyes. I take a lot more trips to the ophthalmologist than I did when I was younger, but that's something you can correct and you deal with. Yeah, shooting is fun no matter how old you are. I remember when I was a kid, I couldn't get enough, and I guess that's why I'm still doing it to this day. It's something that gets in your blood, and you just want to keep going and going. And I'll be doing it as long as I live. It's a joy.
Well, listen, we hope that is many, many more years of competition and many, many more championships to come. Bruce Pyatt, as always, sir, thank you very much. Congratulations, and I hope we get a chance to talk again very soon, sir.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Bruce Pyatt, again, joins the champion there at the Bianchi Cup this year. A little bit of a breaking news I want to get to. Springfield, Illinois, there was a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing today that apparently did not hear this really awful FOID bill, the one that would require fingerprinting for FOID card applicants. It would raise the fees. It would shorten the amount of time that the FOID card was applicable. Richard Pearson, the Illinois State Rifle Association executive director, wrote an advisory that today there was a Senate judiciary hearing without Senate Bill 1966 being considered. He says the bill will remain held in this committee and the spring legislative session will end at midnight without passage of this bill in the Illinois Senate. So the regular session ends Friday night at midnight. After tonight, any measure that would pass would require a 3/5 vote in order to get to the governor's desk. So we'll see. I mean, look, this is the Illinois legislature. We've seen crazy things happen. I don't want to declare that, you know, this bill is done and gone and is not a threat for the rest of the session until that deadline has passed. because Lord knows they've played some legislative tricks before. We've seen it. But this appears to be really good news coming out of Springfield, Illinois, where this really bad bill appears to be on ice. Now, still a threat to our neighbors to the north up in Canada is a proposed ban on all handguns, as well as all semi-automatic long guns that would be defined as quote-unquote assault weapons. Bill Blair, the cabinet minister that has been tasked with looking into such a ban, is still being very, very coy about what the Trudeau government plans on doing.
We are prepared to examine any measure that will be effective in reducing that gun violence. But I think I also have a responsibility to look at every measure and to determine what would be most effective. Quite frankly, we are committed to doing the things that work.
Okay, so committed to doing what works. I mean, you could point to, you know, bans in the United States, the handgun ban in Washington, D.C. from 1977 to 2008, which did not reduce violent crime in Washington, D.C. You could look at Chicago's handgun ban, which was in place from 1982 to 2010. That also did not decrease violent crime in the city of Chicago. But I don't think those are the stats that Bill Blair is really talking about. I think if the Trudeau government, as it appears likely, moves forward with a sweeping ban, you will hear him talk about Australia, where violent crime is already on the decline before their sweeping gun ban was put in place. You will hear him talk about the steps that New Zealand has taken without acknowledging the low crime rate in New Zealand before this sweeping gun ban, and the fact that the gun ban is actually not even going to affect yet. Those will be the two countries, I think, that Bill Blair will actually talk about. Now, there does still seem to be a bit of uncertainty as to how likely it is that the Trudeau government is actually going to move forward with this. 6 months ago, I think the impression that most people had is that, yep, this was a fait accompli, that this was going to happen. The Trudeau government is not particularly popular at the moment. And so a lot of this really comes down to political strategy, unfortunately. I mean, to me, because again, keep in mind, in Canada, it's not considered a right. Your ability to own a firearm is not considered a right. So it's all politics. It's all political. And the Trudeau government has to decide, is this going to do more to energize our base or energize our opposition? We've seen some polls in Canada suggesting that this is popular, that a majority of Canadian voters would be on board with a handgun ban, with a ban on semi-automatic firearms that they would define as quote-unquote assault weapons, that this would, on paper, and according to a couple of these polls, that this would stand to benefit the Trudeau government. The fact that we have not seen the Trudeau government move forward with this plan suggests to me that they know that despite whatever these polls say, the intensity of the reaction would be much more lopsided. So let's say in Canada, the Trudeau government moves forward and says, all right, you know what, we're going to ban all handguns, we're going to ban all semi-automatic long guns known as quote-unquote assault weapons. You may have, let's say, 55% of Canadians go, oh, good, that's nice, right? But you may have 45% of Canadians say, oh, hell no, and now I'm going to do everything I can in my power to make sure that the members of Parliament who are supporting this are out. I want to make sure that Justin Trudeau is not going to be the prime minister again because his party is going to be swept from power. I'm going to be doing that in this upcoming federal election. So on the one hand, you might have a majority of people say, oh, that's nice. But are they going to get involved? Are they going to defend those politicians who would take such draconian steps, again, aimed at the legal gun owners of Canada, a piece of legislation that would not impact the violent criminals in Canada one bit? I think the intensity gap goes in favor of the gun owners if the Trudeau government were to make such a move. All right, let's get to today's hero of the day, as well as our good guy of the day. Hero of the day from KVIA in El Paso, Texas. You see the headline there. Man shot and killed in El Paso, broke into his home, attempted to assault his sister's ex. This was an individual identified as a relatively young man, 29-year-old Jorge Cano Jr. Authorities say that according to what they've been able to determine, Cano Jr. and his sister went to the home, in fact, broke into this home in order to confront the woman's ex-boyfriend, identified by police as 35-year-old Aaron Raymond Roman. Police say that the Canoes intended to assault Roman after they broke into his house, Police said that Jorge Cano forced his way into the residence by kicking in the front door, and both he and Jessica Cano entered the home intending to assault Roman. So police have determined that Mr. Roman was already acting in self-defense when he shot Jorge Cano in his home, who died at the scene. Jessica Cano has at last report been charged with burglary of habitation and booked into the El Paso County Detention Facility on a $40,000 bond. Again, Mr. Roman not facing any charges for acting in self-defense after the pair kicked in the front door of his home with the intent of assaulting him. He is today's hero of the day. Our good guy of the day, brought to you by our friends at Odor Crusher. This might be our youngest good guy from Aldmore, Alabama. An 8-year-old in Escambia County, Alabama, being hailed as a hero. Kinley Madison is a second grader at Huxford Elementary. She was with her grandmother, Becky Sorrells, at their home in Atmore, Alabama. This was back in April. And Kinley said that her grandmother's breathing machine for emphysema all of a sudden stopped working. And her grandmother could not take a breath. She said, "I was super scared. I started crying." But she still had the presence of mind at 8 to pick up the phone, to call 911. Not only was she able to give the first responders the address, but she was able to direct them to avoid the main driveway, which was so muddy that they would have gotten stuck and would have not been able to reach the home. She had the presence of mind to tell those first responders, "Hey, don't use the main driveway." It's amazing. She said if they came around the curve, they would have gotten stuck because it was all piled up. She said, "I told them, please hurry," because she couldn't breathe. Her breathing machine wasn't working. So emergency responders did make it. They gave her grandmother oxygen. They were able to transport her to the hospital. She ended up spending about a week there in the hospital recovering. And that's why a lot of folks say that if Kinley wasn't there, her grandmother might not be here today. She says, "I love her. That's why I saved her." And the Escambia County, Alabama Sheriff's Office got wind of what had happened here. Deputy Jeff Weaver said it was pretty amazing that she knew exactly what to do and even called back a second time to make sure that they were on the way. Deputy Weaver knows Kinley because he's the school resource officer at Huxford Elementary School. And so a couple of days ago, Deputy Weaver and the Sheriff Heath Jackson presented Kinley with the Sheriff's Office Life-Saving Award. Deputy Weaver saying, "It is not every day that you recognize an 8-year-old in this community." He said, "For us to do that with her, we hope that it'll help her in the future to choose the right path." As NBC 15 reported, if you ask Kinley, "It means the world." She says, "It makes me feel happy and it makes me feel loved." Well, in the right place, at the right time, and again, willing and able to do the right thing, Kinley Madison there in Alabama, we thank you for being one of the many, many good guys out there. Now, that is unfortunately about all the time that we have for you on this edition of Cam and Company. Thank you so much for being a part of the program today. Hope that you enjoy your weekend. Be safe. Have fun. We will see you back here Monday, 5:30 Eastern, with all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We'll see you then.